Greetings, troubled listeners. Welcome back to the Troubled Men Podcast. I am Renee Coatman, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, man.
Hey.
How are you? I just had this huge bowl of pozole.
Huh, what is
that? You like pozole?
What is pozole?
It's kind of like a menudo, but it doesn't have tripe.
It's corn.
It's right? Hominy.
Hominy,
and,
right.
Yeah, hominy, but you either have pork or beef or chicken, and you can have it red or green.
Huh, so it's and like, I just had hominy's this, like grits, kind of, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess, but no. It's
no?
Not.
It's like,
no, it's not. No.
It's dumpling-y, right? Kinda?
It's hominy yeah. is kind of like a huge kernel of corn.
Hmm.
And you can either have it white or yellow.
Oh, so it's
now,
not
that's
ground.
What you have in menudo.
Right.
You have the hominy.
Right.
Yeah, it's not ground.
Okay.
And I just had this huge bowl.
Your wife makes that for you?
No, every Father's Day, these Hispanic hookers that I know that I see like twice or three times a year, they like me, so they invite me over to have pozole.
Oh, nice.
And they're good girls.
Yeah.
You know,
good cooks,
very good cooks.
Okay.
Better cooks than whores, I'll tell you that.
Well,
because their pozole is very flavorful, but their you know their other parts aren't. But that's what happens to whores.
Yeah, what?
You know, they lose their flavor.
Yeah. Like gum, like chewing gum.
Yeah, like chewing gum.
Okay, I didn't know
you can
that.
Only chew down so much.
Right, right.
You know.
So
anyway,
okay.
It was very good.
All right.
And I've got leftovers.
Huh.
If you guys want to.
I don't think I've ever had that.
You would love it.
Okay,
man.
I might. Might
your bandmates, a couple of them might know what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure Joe
Cabral. They know about whores. Sure. But anyway, so I'm so full.
Yeah.
And it was so good. And so that's what's been going on the last 24 hours for me.
Okay. Well, so this is a holdover from yesterday, which was Father's Day?
Yeah, Father's Day.
Did you eat the same meal yesterday?
No, I did not.
Oh, okay.
I ate something else.
Okay.
And I'm not going to get into that.
Okay. Right now. Yeah, no, better to...
Have you ever had sex with a retarded person?
I have not.
You sure?
Well... I'm pretty sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, because
yeah.
I've known tons of women in my life, and some of them were just stupid.
Well,
you know,
fine line.
You know, there's a fine line, exactly.
Yeah,
right
yeah, yeah.
There.
Unless you have like an IQ test that you're administering,
yeah,
you know.
You know. Some of them I met at the Jerry Lewis telephone.
Okay.
So, that's a whole other story. And Jerry introduced me to him.
Yeah.
You know, he was a good guy, Jerry.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Until he got drunk.
Oh, yeah.
And then he'd start doing walk on.
He'd start imitating
himself with a gun in his hand. That's not good.
No.
It's not good.
No, no. But he wouldn't do this on camera.
No. He was too busy, you know, yelling at the crew.
Okay.
Anyway, what's going on with you?
Oh, well, what's going on with me? Well, I've had a kind of quiet week for the most part since I saw you. I did play a gig with the Iguanas on Friday night. And it was an early set, and so I was able to sneak out, go. It was kind of in the Bywater, my first gig, and so I got to swing by Siberia and see one of my favorite rock bands in town, Malavitas.
Oh, so, yeah.
It's
I don't know who they are.
Terrific band. Well, we had the singer, Tiana Hux Dews, on the show. That was during the pandemic. And we had the guitar player, Rob Cambray.
Oh, yes, on Rob.
Way
yes.
in the early days back at the Ring Room. And then we had the drummer, who just kind of is phasing out of the band. And his name is Jeff Massey. We had him on the podcast here
And didn't Carlo play with this band?
Carlo did play in that band for a time. Yes.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. And he died.
He did die.
Carlo is dead.
Still dead. Yes.
Yeah.
So he was not on the gig this past weekend, but the band is still terrific. You know, Tiana is she's like a performance artist, actress, you know, singer, poet. She's one of these people that when she's on stage, even when she's not singing, you can't take your eyes off of her because...
You got a thing for her or something like that?
Well, I She's a tremendous performer. I really dig her as a.
I kind of remember what she looks like.
She's tall and slender.
Yeah, she's tall.
And she's.
She's got a rack.
She's a thin girl.
A thin girl.
So, but she's has a, you know, she's a lovely person. She's very captivating, and the band is really coming into its own. And it's one of these bands that I'm watching them, and I'm thinking to myself, even as they're rocking, it's less rocking and more throbbing, which is something I like a band to do.
Absolutely.
You know, it's.
Are you sure the band was throbbing and not you?
The whole room was throbbing, man.
Over Tiana?
The whole room was throbbing.
You got a thing for this tall girl?
As I say, she's married. She's a friend of mine. She's a performer, you know.
But she makes you throb.
Well, the band has a throbbing approach to playing music, which...
So they show porno behind the stage while they're playing?
Don't get too, it's nothing sexual about this throb necessarily, although that's not true.
It's platonic. Platonic throb.
Sure. Yeah, I'll leave it at that. Okay. But anyway, that was...
I won't.
That's a... Now, at this gig, I ran into former Troubled Men podcast guest Chris Champagne.
Oh, yes. Oddly enough.
And he's looking good. He's
really?
Looking very healthy. Yeah, he's another tall drink of water himself. And he
probably stopped the crack.
Had a sharp haircut.
He's been on crack for like the last few years.
Okay, well, he must have cleaned that up because the skin looked good. I spoke to him.
And you had a throb for him all of a sudden?
Well, I mean, we were all throbbing there. But, you know, I spoke to him kind of, I can't remember. It might have been towards the end of the gig, but or after the gig.
After you shot your loads.
Well, no, it's... okay, sure, whatever. Before and after.
Now, where was this gig?
At Siberia.
Oh,
on
Siberia.
St. Claude.
Do they still sell the Russian food there?
I didn't make it into the back. I think they may. They may have some borscht back there.
Because they used to have a little kitchen back there. Had some really good Russian food. Now, I don't know what's really good Russian food and what's really bad. I like vodka.
Yeah. Sure.
You know.
They have that still.
Yeah.
They still have vodka there.
All right. So who's running the Siberia? Because I know our former guest, Luke Spur Allen, was an owner, but he couldn't make it work.
Well, yeah, they actually did build it up, and I think they made money when they sold that business. And But they haven't owned it for probably, I don't know, 8 years at this point, 7, 8 years. But I'm not sure who owns it. I've played there a few times under this new management. Seems pretty much the same. As far as you know,
it's a dump, just like what
we're
in right now.
It's a rock box, you know. It's a black, rock and roll room with a 2.5-foot
rock and roll. What does that mean?
Well, you know, like these boxes. It's just the walls are black. It's a square box. They have a PA system, a 2.5-foot stage, a bar, and a concrete floor.
and Hispanic hookers.
Perhaps they allow anyone in there. It is
as long as you pay to get in.
It is St. Claude Avenue. That shit. They might even give the hookers a break, man. You know, they're working.
Maybe they'll give them some pozole.
Maybe so. Or some
borscht.
Did
I tell you I love pozole? You ever had pozole?
I have. I love it.
Yeah, I love pozole.
It's only recently have I had it, but I really
it's
love
good
it.
Stuff.
It is.
Man.
It's
with some warm tortillas, mm-hmm. and you put some onions and radishes on it.
Absolutely.
A little bit of shredded cabbage.
So is this like a soup consistency?
Yeah, it's a stew.
A stew.
It's like a stew. It's like a menudo, but without the tripe.
Right. Now, do you like menudo?
I love menudo.
You like it with the tripe?
Oh, I love it with the tripe.
Okay.
Gotta have the tribe. That's the flavor.
The texture freaks me out.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean,
but if you've got a hooker, you know, going down on you while you're eating it, he'll eat anything.
Okay.
Well, you know what I'm saying?
It's like Charlie Parker, man.
Yeah.
It's like a
Charlie
bird
Parker.
Lives.
Yeah. It's okay. Or Pinheiro. You remember Pinheiro? The poet, screenwriter from New York. Puerto Rican guy, Pinheiro.
Don't know Pinheiro.
Oh, man. Look up Pinheiro.
I will.
Man.
I will.
He used to. Oh, I'm not going to do this. Now, man. I'll save it for later.
Okay. Chris Champagne was saying, I was suggesting to him maybe we should have him back on the show since his episode got so mangled over the internet.
Well, that's what happens when you smoke too much crack.
Yeah. It's you can't expect it to be expected to,
you know,
to cover
like,
all
you can't understand a person when they're, you know, you know, scraping the floors and thinking the cottage cheese ceiling is, you know, a bunch of crack pebbles, you know. Anyway, he's a good guy.
Yeah, yeah. So he's got has another show coming out. He's going to be, he's developing it some more political satire. So we'll have to keep an eye out for Chris Champagne. Maybe have him back out.
Yeah.
Let's see. I don't know. Watching anything interesting on any of the streaming services, Manny? Have you seen it?
I think I'm putting them on, but I'm not watching them.
Yeah.
I go, oh, this sounds interesting, and I turn it on to whatever channel, the Netflix or the Amazon or the Hulu or the Paramount or the Zappo or the Zemno or the MGM. I put on these shows, but I never watch them. It's, oh, this sounds interesting, but then I end up just passing out.
Yeah, it's hard to
You know what's going on, though? What I do remember is that... you know that 4th of July hot dog eating contest they
have
on Coney Island? Well, the 15-time defending champion, Joey Chestnut, you know who he is?
I actually do, strangely, yeah.
Yeah, he's like devoured. He's won every year for like 15 years. Yeah. Like
dominates.
80 hot dogs in a row.
Yeah.
You know.
A little skinny guy.
Yeah, he's tall.
Oh, okay.
He's kind of skinny. But apparently he's been banned this year.
Oh,
I heard that.
He's banned because he's sponsoring some vegan food.
Or he's has a sponsorship deal with
a vegan company.
Vegan hot dog company.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're hot dogs. Okay, I just think they're vegan.
Okay.
And Nathan's was like, we don't want any of that. So you're out.
It's all beef or nothing.
Yeah, it's like you're out.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of good.
Yeah.
It's good for the sport.
Right.
If you can call it a sport.
Yeah.
They call it a sport.
Well, right. I mean, they're like athletes.
Yeah, they are athletes.
That
competitive
Have you seen them?
I've never seen it.
They're like they're like bowlers.
Yeah.
Bowlers. You know, they're like bowlers. Those guys are athletes too, apparently. Anyway, I think it's very good for the sport.
I think you could probably do both of those sports and
at the same time.
Neither one.
Yeah.
Well, you really can. Yeah. I mean, you could probably do one, then the other.
Yeah.
It wouldn't interfere with the efficacy of performance in either arena.
Right. Now, if you could eat a bowling ball, now that would be something.
It's a whole other level.
Yeah. It's a different kind of competition.
Yeah. I know one of those whores I knew could. Anyway, so I think it's good for the sport because every year I watch that competition on 4th of July, and he just dominates, and they always introduce all these competitors against him. This guy ate 40 tacos in 20 minutes, and he ends up eating like 5 hot dogs and loses. And this guy ate, 17 platters of oysters, and he eats like 20 hot dogs. So I think it's going to be good because someone will come out as the winner only eating like 30 hot dogs or something.
Just to open it up to the field.
Open it up to, and you know, that Kobayashi guy who was Chestnut's big competition.
What happened
to him? He's quit the whole sport.
Really? You think he might get back into it?
No. He quit because apparently, now I didn't know this could happen to you, but he's got health issues.
No kidding.
Yeah, I did not know that this could happen to competitive eating people. Yeah. You know, but he's quit the sport. He's retired. He's back in Japan, looking for some geisha or something like that. Okay. I have no idea. But yeah, he's done. So, it's an opportunity.
Yeah. Does that interest you, Manny?
Into it.
I'm not a big... I like hot dogs, but...
Not that much.
I don't like to eat them that fast.
Sure.
You know?
Savor.
And apparently the strategy is you dip them in liquid, and then you shove them down your throat.
Swallow them whole.
You separate them, right? You break the hot dog.
Yeah, they do all that stuff. Like, there's a whole strategy. There's a whole strategy. But no, I have no interest in that. Now, I could be in a pozole eating contest.
Oh.
Pozole.
Which I was going to ask. I mean, that would be something else.
Yeah, I could do that, but not tonight.
No.
Not tonight. But anyway, what else is happening?
What else is happening? Just kind of settling down. I don't have any gigs for a little while here.
Now, did you get your love from your father or no?
I did have
you had a family thing.
The whole family over at my house yesterday. My father was there,
and he just stared at you.
Yeah, he just stared at me. Both my children were there though, so
and
that
they
was,
stared at you.
That
too.
Was great. Yeah, we stared back at each other.
You guys ate hot dogs together.
Now since I was home this year, often I've seems like most Father's Day I'm out Father's Days I'm out on the road,
And that's planned, right?
Well,
in advance.
But what it requires is that I make this phone call home where I speak to my father and I tell him how I'm doing.
And he says, "Who is this?"
And it always ends, you know, I wish him a happy Father's Day. And then at the end, this is, and I would do this in front of the band because after a while it became kind of a joke because I knew what he was going to do. I'd say, "Okay, Dad, well, I love you." And he'd go, "Thank you." And so now that when I'm home and I'm there, I see him, I don't have to say that. It doesn't put him on the spot. Not that he could say anything at this point. He's not a big talker these days. but it alleviates that uncomfortable conversation for him.
Well, over the years have you ever thought about saying you're welcome?
Be polite.
I'm usually chuckling.
Right.
It's hard for me to anyway. So yes, I had a moment with my father and my kids. It was lovely. So how about you? Did you have your daughter come over and spend some time with you yesterday?
Maybe she did. I have no idea. She's a good girl, though. I think she came over the night. I think she was busy on Father's Day.
Yeah.
She came over the night before. And actually, it was the funniest thing. She brought over, I don't know where she found this, but it was like this cupcake that was about 8 to 10 inches high and about 6 inches wide. It was a cupcake.
Isn't that more of a cake than a cupcake?
No, but it still had like the cupcake holder, you know, okay. The doily.
Uh-huh.
It still had that doily thing. Huh. And it was filled with flavors, you know, the whole nine yards. And
well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was. I don't know where she got it. I don't know, but it was kind of interesting. So yeah, she came by. Oh, she
okay,
would be,
very
you
good.
Know, but speaking of loving people,
uh-huh.
You know, you say you love your dad, and uh-huh. He just says thank you and stuff. I remember one of the few times that I've been in a very long relationship back in my youth. I was with this girl, fabulous girl, beautiful girl. Back in, I think, the late 80s, early 90s, just like that. And I think we'd been together about 2 years or so. And I think we had just made love or something like that. And we went to the room to have a smoke or something. And we sat down, and she's sitting there smiling and gushing. And I sat her down, and she's waiting for me, you know, to say it. And I said to her, "Why are we still together?" And it was over after that night. But that reminds me of you and your dad.
Okay. It does kind of ring a bell. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But anyway.
That's a good story. I like that one, man.
Yeah, that's a good story.
Yeah,
well, she was a good girl.
Yeah, nice, nice.
She couldn't make pasole, though.
Touching, yeah.
That.
Well, you had to get rid of her. Yeah, you just had to show her the road.
Anyway.
Maybe we should get to our guest.
Yeah, right? Let's get to our guest. Yeah, yeah. He seems like a good guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy. All right, well, this is our guest. This is a guy I've been known for a couple of years now. I've been trying to get him on the podcast right from the start. We've finally done it, finally landed him, finally got him in the boat here. So he's a multi-talented guitar player, keyboard player, songwriter, singer, recording artist, band leader, composer. He's best known since 2008 as the keyboard player and third guitar player, harmony vocalist with Americana roots southern rock powerhouse group, the Drive-By Truckers.
Oh.
He's also a pop and power pop fanatic, fiend, tone scientist with several solo records to his credit, including The Bittersweet, Back to the Hive, Mess of Happiness, and the most recent release is Roll Up a Song. It's an album that he put out as Gonzalez Smith in a collaboration with the lyricist Pete Smith from Adult Swim. I guess he's a comedy writer for Adult Swim, so that's a very interesting project there. Anyway, we're going to get into all that and more, but without further ado, the great Mr. Jay Gonzalez. Welcome, Jay.
Thanks so much, Renee.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
So glad you could do this. You know, it's kind of a last-minute thing. I know how it is in a rock band. You're out on the road there. Y'all are in the middle of like a couple of month long tour, and people would always say, why don't you tell me ahead of time when you're getting to town?
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't think of, you know, all I can do is the very next thing I have to do.
it's a one thing at a time thing. But yeah. I probably should have reached out before yesterday, but, you know, it was...
Well, as it turns out, you did.
Yes.
And we're able to corral you in here to the confines of Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge.
And I do appreciate the early, you know, the Monday. I appreciate you coming out on a Monday. I know it's not the norm and such, but, you know.
Well, if it was football season, we wouldn't be here.
Okay, absolutely.
Right. So you're lucky.
It's all the stars aligned.
Yes.
So, tell us what you're doing here in town. You were playing a show last night, right?
Yeah. Drive-By Truckers played over at the Civic. And,
Civic, yes.
Yeah. And then that's it. We played at the Civic.
Right.
And,
So I've been to the Civic a couple of times. First time, Manny and I saw Public Image Limited there.
Yeah.
Remember that show? It was a very loud show.
Yeah.
And then I saw the Breeders there about 3 months later. Perfectly appropriate volume level. Room sounded way better.
Yeah,
but they sucked.
Oh no, Breeders were great. That's one of my favorite bands. I love it.
Really?
Lovely volume. Just
yeah, the Deal Sisters. Yeah,
no. I do love the Deal Sisters. Yeah. I saw their high school pictures recently because there was their birthday and they posted it. And it's beautiful with the feathered hair from the early '80s and stuff. And
I was Farrah Fawcett-esque.
Yeah, like flashback to like my babysitters growing up and not to get too into that whole thing, but yeah, that room is it's you know, it's made for like plays and theater productions and not loud.
Yeah,
shit,
you can't overdrive it.
But yeah,
so you guys are passing through town. You're on this tour. What kind of working your way towards the west right now?
Yeah, we're going to Texas tomorrow. We're driving up Houston and then playing a few shows in Texas and then heading. To the West Coast, yeah. Playing,
nice.
Moving up the coast and stuff.
Right on.
Ending in Denver and then heading home.
Right, right. And then you have a few months break and then you kind of start back up in October or something like that?
Yeah, we do another month of the same kind of show that we're doing right now.
Cool. And this show right now, this is the Southern Rock Opera Revisited.
Right.
So that's a Drive-By Truckers album from like 2001 or something that you guys are talk about what y'all are doing on this tour.
Yeah, it was like something they used to throw around in the van when they drive around, wanting to do like a concept album about the South in the '60s and the civil rights movement, but through the eyes of a band vaguely like Lynyrd Skynyrd and
so a racist band.
Well, yeah. I mean, no. I mean, no.
No, Southern band.
Southern rock band. They, you know, they weren't necessarily Skynyrd fans. You know, our singer is like more of a, you know, he's more of like an REM Southern rock guy or the DBs or something. But when he decided to write this thing, he was like, well, this is the perfect kind of band to, you know, base it around. And so the fictional band that this is... about is called Betamax Guillotine, and so you know because have you heard about this?
Yeah.
The rumor that on the plane, the Skynyrd plane crash, that's what took Ronnie Van Zant out was a Betamax.
Oh,
so
man.
Betamax Guillotine. But then when
Betamax?
Like the old pre VCR, early VCR kind of things flying around, you know.
Oh, geez.
So not to make light of that at all,
but
that's what, you know, that's what it was. And then, you know, I guess when it comes time to release that, that's maybe, you know, his buddy Dick Cooper suggested, like, you know.
Did you know
Southern
anyone
rock.
Who had a Betamax back then? I didn't know anybody.
I do know one person who had a Betamax. Not me. No, not me. I would never. No. I'm not going to mention their name because I don't want to shame them out here on the podcast. But yeah.
So wait a minute. Let's go back before all this shit.
Yeah.
Where are you from?
Originally, I'm from New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
I live in Georgia now. I moved south.
So what, you grew up in New York in the city?
Not in the city. You know, I was in, born in Yonkers, so Yonkers. Vaguely the city. But then,
okay.
And then we moved up upstate, which is on, you know, an hour, 6 hours upstate, but we were an hour north of the city.
Right. So. Okay. So you're embarrassed to say where. It's okay.
Somers, New York, man. It's, you know, it's there's not a lot going on there, you know.
You weren't in the Cloisters, though, were you?
No. I visited the Cloisters in school.
Yeah.
You know, and it was good times. It was cool. It was, you know, drapes and you know, it was cool. But like, yeah, but that kind of thing, like the kind of school where they take you to the Cloisters.
Yeah.
You know, take you into the city to see the Cloisters.
Cool.
Or thereabouts. But yeah, not super cool.
So you
cool,
spent
yeah.
your childhood there, and then you moved down south.
Yeah.
Well, but let's go back a little bit before we moved down south. So are you interested in playing music as a kid?
Yeah.
How early does that start?
Pretty early, like 7 or 8. You know, you're in, you know, around the city, and there's, you know, there's really good music going on, you know, down in downtown the city. But then, you know, when you're in the suburbs, you hear it's like Billy Joel and like, you know, piano shit. And I'm like 7 years old. So I was like, oh, I'll take piano lessons and become a singer-songwriter. And
what possessed you to do that?
I mean, just listening. My mom taking me into fucking Caldor, fucking, you know, the equivalent to Woolworths up there or whatever. You pick a record. And I picked this fucking guy throwing a rock at a glass house. I was like 7 years old in 1980, and it's fucking Billy Joel glass houses. It's like singer songwriter trying to do a fucking
that's so
rock
punk
album.
Rock,
it's so
it?
It's so it's I mean it's it loops around and comes around.
Yeah.
You know it's so unpunk rock. It's like Linda Ronstadt doing her punk rock. You know, all those singer songwriters did. You know, they're new wave album.
Right, right.
You know, when you're 7 years old, you don't fucking know. I had like a bubblegum thing, like Tops put out this, like, you know,
yeah.
I had Chipmunk Punk, for the love of God.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, it's my fault, but it's also like what was there, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and, you know, I saw Blondie on fucking Solid Gold and had a whole epiphany of, you know, what Gold Lame and just like, oh my God, this is my life. But it took a while to get to the good shit, you know. So anyway, point being, play piano, then start playing guitar. And
but yeah, so, well, you're going too fast. So I'm,
yeah, sorry,
fascinated
sorry.
With this.
No, that, I'm trying to get out of it now. I realize opening up a real can of worms, man.
As a seven-year-old,
yeah.
You're seeing that and you're thinking, yes, this could be something for me. No, I like that.
Yeah. I was a precocious in any other way other than like, you know, yeah.
Like many of our...
So you're from a broken home?
No,
oh, okay.
It's pretty, you know, pretty
dad,
together.
What did your
more
dad
do? My dad was a postman for a while.
Uh-huh.
You know, and
was
and
he
then,
a musician also?
He
no?
was not.
Did you have a piano in your home?
Well, after I wanted to, you
after
know,
you got that album,
become the next,
yeah,
Elton John or whatever. Yeah, we got a, and they were very supportive. I had a neighbor named Barney who used to, like, you know, played violin and used to like worked at Yankee Stadium, and he used to like, oh, your kid, you know, likes music and you should buy him a piano. And so I bought a piano, and he also gave us Yankee Stadium seats from the original Yankee Stadium, and then we sold them at a yard sale, which I really kills me right now thinking about what we could have made off that.
You never got to go to a game.
No.
He gave you the seat.
Yeah.
The entrance to the game.
I never let it. We was retired. We were Mets fans anyway.
Oh, okay.
Which is sad, you know.
Yeah.
But we were the Mets. We were underdogs, you know.
Yeah.
And so you know.
So you study piano for a few years.
Yeah, like you know, just
then,
like simple
then you
shit.
Start teaching yourself guitar, or how does
yeah,
that come
yeah, you know,
in?
Yeah, the 80s. So it was you know, as you may imagine, in the suburbs. Not the best lessons, but I had aunts and uncles and folks that like turned me on to like Joe Jackson and some cool shit. So I was like
cool.
trying to get like into
well,
the,
that's a piano player.
Well,
that's
he is.
Yeah,
I mean, but he's not. He is. To me, I think that was the key was him because I mean, I was hearing, you know, on MTV, I was hearing Stepping Out. I was hearing the, you know, him trying to do like Cole Porter. But then they gave me the first couple of albums and it was like, well, his piano, he arranged it on piano, but he has a guitar, a band playing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's
great
it's,
band.
I love him. I love him. I got to see him when they got back together. It was unreal, man. But I saw Joe Jackson here at the Joy Theater maybe 5 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
And this dude in the audience kept yelling, Joe, I live behind you on 125th Street. Like he's like 40 feet from the stage. And it was awesome. Anyway,
well, Joe Jackson, I'll never forget the first time I like really got introduced to him because I'd heard his music, But then he was on American Bandstand one Saturday.
Right.
I think it's like 1980.
Right.
Like a senior in high school or something like that. And, you know, Dick Clark, you know, he plays his song. And Dick Clark goes, "So, Joe, welcome to America. How you like in America?" He goes, "I hate it." And I was like, "Well, this guy's
good." No, he's awesome. I mean, yeah, he, you know.
Like, he goes, "I hate it." And Dick Clark's like going, "All right, we'll be right back." Yeah. And then they came back from commercial and Joe was gone.
No, yeah, absolutely. He didn't, you know. He against all odds, became kind of huge with stepping out and stuff.
Oh,
and,
man,
you know.
I never forget one time me and my good friend Dick Rude were driving down to Tijuana, Mexico, because I'm from Los Angeles.
Right.
We're going to a party in Tijuana.
Right.
And we're in this old, his mom's Datsun B210.
Yeah.
And Stepping Out's on.
Yeah.
He's like, "Okay, click the other stage." Yeah. Stepping Out. Click the other stage. Stepping Out.
I
like,
can't get away.
Can't get away from this fucking thing.
It's market penetration, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like,
holy moly.
Fuck.
That's only 2 years after, you know, the got Look Sharp or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. It was just like, okay, I get it. It's a huge hit.
Right. Found his way to the mainstream.
Right. Yeah, really quickly. And then split after, but you know.
Well, you know, this is you're growing up in the new wave era here and all this music. Now you become you're playing guitar, playing piano. You already have this deep love of pop music.
Right.
Now that really blossoms. I mean, you're someone, when we finally met, I realize your depth of knowledge. You know about so much more music than I do. In a sense,
not true at all. But it's in that, maybe in that little nook or something. But like, I freaked out when I met you and we talked about some heavy stuff. We caught up.
we have a lot of common areas of interest for sure. But
crack.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, that's everybody likes that. That's so
crack whores too
about it. Well, so you start playing in bands at some point?
Yeah.
Like, how old are you?
Yeah, like
what
high
kind
school
of
kind of thing.
Yeah,
just, you know, again, sort of like not hit bands, but like, you know. Not even cover bands. We would write stuff, but it was very, like, almost like proggy kind of, you know, it was like very suburban kind of, like, you know.
Overly complicated.
Overly complicated,
but the chicks dug it.
Yeah,
right?
You know, it was well. Not really, but like, yeah, it was, you know, it was just the Zeppelin, the sort of nothing, no surprises kind of thing, but you know.
So you're in upstate New York, you're a high school band and all that. You go to school up there?
Yeah. And then, and then we played in bands, and then in high school, the whole thing was like, my parents are both, you know, I'm like first generation here. They're from Italy and Puerto Rico. And they're like, "You going to school?" And I'm like, "I don't want to go to school." But they're like, "Well, you got to go to school." So it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go for music. And in the 80s, there wasn't like fucking, you know, rock school and school of rock and like rock and roll and degrees like now that where there's like engineering degrees.
Music business degrees.
Yeah, music business degrees.
Right,
there's like nothing like that. And it was like jazz or classical music, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, and I knew it wasn't going to be, I was in the jazz band, but I sucked, you know, it was bad. And so I was like, well, I'd done the piano thing and I listened to like some metal stuff that had leanings like Ozzy Osbourne. I listened to some shit that like, that was my entry drug into like classical music. So like I learned how to play some classical guitar, took lessons, and then I got into state school, SUNY school, but not, you know, not like SUNY Purchase or something right by the city, but like SUNY Fredonia, which is like Western New York by Buffalo kind of, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so I lived there for 4 years. So I was like, not only, I really went to like upstate, you know, for a while. And then that's where I met a band that my good friends, and we moved down to Georgia after that. So.
Huh. Now, why was that?
Well,
it was warmer.
It was warmer. I mean, it was, looking back, you know, my wife's.
I mean, anywhere is better than upstate New York.
No,
frankly,
I met my wife the year I moved down to Georgia, and she's from Macon, you know, and she's like, there's no way we're ever moving up there. There's just no way. And as I get older, I'm like, you know, you're right. Every time we tour up there, it's like, oh my God, it's beautiful. And like, August, but it's like ever the rest of the year, it's just 4 feet of snow. And, you know, I mean, we used to have like a rope going from telephone pole to go to a party, you know,
oh,
and like, you know, it was like a risk of like freezing to death on the way home when you're just wasted leaving a party, which one of my buddies almost, he went the wrong direction and woke up in a drift, you know, and walked home. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a different kind of thing. I mean, people, God bless them, I mean, Canadians and shit. I don't know how they do it, but
sure. Know, that's, you know, that's their problem.
It is absolutely. Yeah.
But was this like kind of chasing the REM thing?
No, it wasn't.
Athens,
I mean,
Georgia.
I liked REM a lot. This was our singer. She was dating a buddy of ours who was moving to his friends to Georgia to Athens, and she said, "If you want to keep the band together," which, you know, at this point, it's like you been through a bunch of bands, it's like, why didn't we just split up? But it was like, well, we're gonna keep it together. And so we one by one moved to Athens, Georgia. And like, you know,
so your dad's Italian?
My dad's Puerto Rican, my mom's Italian.
Okay,
yeah.
That's Gonzalez.
Yeah, that's Gonzalez. Yeah.
So they wanted you to go to school.
Yeah.
Not follow in their footsteps.
Well, I mean, you know, he did go to school. He went to 2-year school. He's a real smart guy, and I think they wanted me to
alive?
Go. Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Did you wish him Happy Father's Day?
I did yesterday. Yeah.
Does he tell you he loves you?
He does.
Okay.
He does. I'm sorry. He does. No, it's you know, he's loving. He's he shares my like.
But then he says, "Who is this?"
No, I sent him my gift. Was like. You had mentioned the Datsun T10. My dad used to, like, he had a bunch of, like, five. He was obsessed with 510s, and, like,
he had them.
Oh, he worked on cars. He taught himself to work on cars. He was kind of self-taught, you know. He was really, anyway, I associate because he had all these cars, and when I was a teenager, he gave me a Datsun 510, and
sweet.
I promptly crashed it. And
even better.
And he fixed it, and then he cut off the front of another 510 that we had in, like, the backyard, and welded it to the front.
Nice.
Yeah, so like, yeah, it's like, who the fuck does that for their kid? And of course, you know, I'm just like...
Well, it was Puerto Rican.
This is what, yeah, well, yeah. There we go. And he would really appreciate it.
Yeah.
He would he tells the best Puerto Rican jokes, which is a whole thing in itself.
Well, I don't mean that as a joke. No.
I
mean, that's like the can-do attitude.
No,
like,
it is.
We got half a car here. I know. We'll
oh,
put
no,
it together.
Absolutely.
We got a whole car.
He put it together, and I had it. But anyway...
The whole time your mom's screaming at him, right?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a bit of
what
that.
What are you doing out there so late?
Yeah, there's no like quiet talking,
no,
you know, like,
calm
well,
conversation.
No, of course
I think
not.
I was like reading
hey, I
about,
come from an Italian-Mexican.
Yeah,
now.
Okay, so yeah.
There's no quiet. Everything's like, what?
But it's not even, you're not mad. They're not mad.
No, we're
they're
not
just
mad.
Yelling, but like I'm doing it now. Like,
yeah,
I'm,
exactly.
I'm sorry. I'm,
yeah,
it's
passion.
No,
yeah,
it is.
It's passion.
It's so weird.
It's a passion. Really. The blood is hot.
It is hot.
Blood is hot.
But so that my gift was like when we pulled up to the Civic Theater yesterday and I'm texting with them and Happy Father's Day, blah, blah, blah. And then I see it says 510 through the window and that's the Civic is like fast. So I took a picture and sent it to him. He was like, oh, that's a great Father's Day gift. And I'm like, no, it's not. What a lame. But it was real sweet of him.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good
so
dude.
So you texted him? You didn't call him?
No.
Well, he had to play.
No,
a show
I did. Yeah. I was going to call him today and I'm doing this instead.
Right.
So, you know, this is my gift.
Blame
Dad.
Us for that.
Dad.
All right. Okay.
I'm talking to you right now.
Yeah, you can send him to this podcast. I'm sure he'll be very proud.
Yeah, he's going to be. It's going to be. I think he'll enjoy it.
Troubled man. What the hell is that about?
No, this is right up his alley.
So you're down in Georgia with this band.
Yeah.
So take us from there to how do you wind up? You play in other bands there? How do you wind up joining the Drive-By
Truckers?
You know
the deal around here. It's like you play with a bunch of people and stuff. It's not. It's a little different in the sense that there's no like actual gigs where you can make a living like playing
in Athens.
In
yeah,
Athens,
they have the 40-watt club.
No,
and
it's
then,
like it's
and
like
nothing,
eight square blocks.
Right.
It's right, like there's right. no. And so I came from this college to like another college town, and there's no. You can play like once a month. Otherwise, no one's gonna come see you. You know, and it's but that's there's no music business there at all. But it's in a way, it's like that's what makes it pretty great because you can kind
of
do whatever
so
the hell you want.
What, backyard parties or?
Well, no, like clubs, but just downtown. There's like two or three places you can play.
That's about it. Okay.
And you just loop through it, you know. But it's still, you know, it's still great. It's still
like
a lot
of musicians there.
Yeah, there was like There was like, at the time, I remember there was like 350 bands.
Wow.
And a very small
three clubs?
Yeah.
Three clubs?
Yeah, yeah. You know, four, five, six clubs. But like, as far as like the hip part of town, like right by the 40 out there.
That's a lot of bands.
You know, you had that, and then you had like, you know, the line where it was like, then it was like frat, like cover bands, you know, they called it like, the khaki line or something, but it was like, there on, it was like bands doing like sort of Widespread Panic and like Allman Brothers covers and stuff. And then you had bands that just, you know, played their own stuff, but no one listened to it other than their buddies, you know, but, but anyway.
What's the big campus there?
UGA, University of Georgia.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, it's right on, it's right downtown. All right,
so that's huge though. That's
big. It's great. And it was awesome kind of coming in. I loved it because I got out of school and I didn't have to like go like find a real job for a while. You know, my parents were like, what are you doing? And I'm like, in a band, you know, I'm playing it. And you can, you know, I remember we paid $75 a piece for this apartment, you know, and we had like two more people than we should have. But like, it was really, you could deliver. I delivered. That's all I ever did was deliver shit back then, was flowers and pizza and
drugs, and
drugs maybe occasionally. I usually received, but yeah. And then I, you know, and then I met my wife, and I would play. The only actually paying gigs I had, she worked at the Athens Country Club, and I, she got me in there and playing like dinner music for the rich folks.
Some solo piano.
Yeah, so I would play like, you know, just anything, but make it sound vaguely sort of classic, you know. And so I'd like, it was like $50 or $60 a night,
sure.
And I was, and free drinks, and then I would sit with like the general manager and have like these fancy dinners, and it was just, but then I'd be like, this is weird. It was a strange thing, you know.
Right.
But
an experience.
It was an experience, yeah. And then those,
you could tell your parents you were doing that. Yeah,
that was, you know, yeah, I put on a suit and
played
some bullshit. But.
Well, man, we're right on the precipice of greatness
of
here.
The excitement.
it seems like about that time, man.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So we're going to get back to that, but first.
The Troubled Nation knows the drill. I'm sure you do. We'll be right back. I have a sweet girl like gelato. Taste the creamy lips, I go incommunicado. She's like a fine wine, a Moscato. One intoxicating sip and I'm reaffectionado. She's my girlfriend, eyes of you.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
Yes.
I am Renee Coman.
You are.
Back with our guest, Mr. Jay Gonzalez. Sweet baby Jay. Now, Jay, I know you are a listener of the podcast since we first met, those 2 long years ago.
Yeah, man.
And so you are familiar with the current situation as far as sponsorship, that we eschew all outside sponsorship as far as the corporate world is concerned.
Yeah, but we would welcome them if they could.
Yeah. We could
reach out to some people.
Yeah, we'd change our tune.
I would promote Burger King right now.
Sure.
Or Dunkin'.
Dr. Scholl's.
Dr. Scholl's.
Talcum powder.
We're ready to endorse. Sanitary napkins.
Sure, yeah.
I would.
Yeah, we could.
Those guys have helped me out quite
a bit. he can be persuaded. Okay. But currently, we're relying on the listener support. That's what we call it.
Yeah.
And we have the Venmo link and the PayPal link there and the show notes of every show, as well as that that pinned Facebook page. It has all the links there. Also, we have... occasionally, people will send us mail at the bar, like last week.
Yeah, last week.
Eddie Voynich sent a piece of mail to the bar because he doesn't have any of that those newfangled links. He doesn't deal with that. So we like that.
The FBI came right after. Yeah. It was weird.
So,
kind of powder. I don't know. Some kind of powder.
Anthrax, I think they call it.
Yeah, I think that's what they called it.
But
he's a good guy.
Oh, yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah, and we want to thank Eddie Voynich and reach out to other people who are, you know, not on the internet and somehow are listening to this still, but maybe you're overhearing it from your child's podcast or something, your child's phone. But yes, you can look up the Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge and send it an envelope. Beyond that, and we do appreciate all the support from our fans and also the Patreon patrons. Can't forget them. They're there week in and week out. You know, we have several tiers. They all pretty much amount to the same thing, which is you get to listen to the show, and you can come drink with us if you wish on that second tier. And the third tier, I will come and mow your lawn, perhaps.
Yes. Now, have you ever had to do that?
I haven't had to do it yet, I just got a new lawnmower.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Just bought a new used lawnmower, man.
A new used? Is it gas powered?
Yeah. It's a gas power.
Is it a Ryobi?
No. It's a Toro.
Oh, Toro. That was pretty good.
I went over to the West Bank, and this is a good story I haven't told on the podcast. I went over to the West Bank. I got this on Facebook Marketplace.
Oh.
For $180, got a $600 lawnmower. Now, I got it home, and 5 minutes later, black smoke was pouring out of the exhaust.
Oh, no. That's not good.
And I thought, man, I got fucked. But then I texted the person back, you know, through the app, and they immediately responded and said, oh, so sorry, bring it back and we'll fix it. And now I'd paid, I could have gotten one for $150 at meeting the person at a Walmart parking lot. And I thought, I'll pay $180 where I get to go to the person's house. And I'm glad I did because they stood behind it. I brought it back. The next day, they texted me again. Actually, when I brought it back, they said, well, here's my cell phone number. So I can, texted me back. We fixed it. Sorry. Come get it. So I have a brand new for me.
Yeah.
Brand new.
Because, you know, there's a word for people who pay retail. Right? Called Gentiles.
<That's>
But,
I know of it.
But or suckers.
So, it's one of the same. Man.
Right.
Well, I said it. I can
fuck.
Say it.
He's anyway, a cheap fuck.
So anyway,
he's got tons of time on his.
I'm prepared to mow anybody's lawn. Like Pete LeBon, I mow the lawn for the new wave. I mow the lawn over Elvis's grave.
Very good. There we go.
So moving on. Yes, we have the Patreon page. So please, we appreciate those people supporting us week in and week out. We have the links for the Troublemen podcast t-shirts if you wish to purchase those. Also, follow us on social media, Instagram and Facebook. And rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. Give us 5 stars. Helps us out a lot. Costs you nothing. And you can check out any Iguanas dates at iguanas.com. And you can check out all of Jay's dates at jaygonzalez.com and drivebytruckers.com. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be on the road more than I am. But I'll be back on the road starting sometime in July. Okay, enough of that. Back to our guest, Mr. Jay Gonzalez, sweet baby Jay. So when we last left you in the story, you were just getting to Athens, and you're telling us how you wound up being in this band. The Drive-By Truckers have been going for, what, like 25?
Yeah.
Over 25 years, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Very successful band. You got two great guitar players, singers, songwriters, kind of co-leaders, if you will. Amazing band. So cool, man. Went and saw y'all at Tipitina's last year. Everything you like in rock and roll, you know, and you occupy this great space of like you're the color guy, you're playing keyboards, you're playing the weird guitar parts. Like for me, I mean, those guys are great, but for me, like who's playing that weird part, that cool part? Oh, it's Jay. That's always you. So how did you wind up? I mean, I think it's a perfect spot for you.
Yeah, I love it. It was so... I mean, we used to go see them play when they first started. They started in 96, and there was this bar called...
Are they based in Athens?
Well, no, you know, they're from Alabama. They're from Muscle Shoals. You know, Patterson grew up, and Cooley grew up in the Muscle Shoals, and his dad was David Hood, is David Hood.
Oh, okay.
Great bass player,
right, okay.
Played with the Muscle Shoals rhythm section.
I'm so stupid.
No,
man,
not
man.
At all, not at all, no.
it's coming together.
No,
okay.
No, it's all, you know, it's just... But the thing was, he grew up sort of the generation after these, like, you know, these guys were studio
icon
session guys, but they weren't touring guys,
right?
Mostly, and they were very precise, and it was like they made hit records. But Patterson was into, like, you know, punk rock and all kinds of other stuff. I mean, he was collecting records since he was little, and he ended up moving to Athens to kind of get to, because of the, you know, he was into the REM thing and everything, but like he moved to Athens to kind of get away from that kind of scene, you know. So it's like, you know, how he appreciates it, and he sings about it, and he loves it, but he was, you know, more of a you know,
forged his own path.
Yeah, did his own thing, and so he moved to Athens, and he worked at this hi-hat club that was our friend had opened years ago, and it was you know, it was originally going to be like a blues club, but then it ended up kind of becoming just bands around town and Americana, for lack of a better word, bands played there and stuff, and that's where I met Patterson, and I ended up playing, so the band I played in, we used to play there all the time. Mm-hmm. and he would do sound, and he did sound, and we met him, and so they were like, I don't know if you heard any of the early records, but it was definitely more country and more like, it was like there was this whole like gangsta like redneck underground thing going on in Atlanta, the Star Bar, if you've ever been there.
Oh,
in Atlanta.
Yeah, I played there a number of times.
But and so that's kind of how he came up with the name, and he wanted to get into that, you know, play there a bunch, and it was a lot more like, it was a little sillier, it was fun, they had an upright bass, pedal steel guitar, it was a different sound, you know. Mm-hmm. but we used to go see him all the time, and the drummer ended up being the drummer in the band my buddy and I joined called The Possibilities, who were in the late 90s. He ended up kind of, he played on the first two Trucker records, Matt Lane, but then he kind of, you know, stayed with his brother Kevin and this guy Bob Spires, and they got me and Chris to be in the band with them. So I joined the band with, like, you know, other members of their,
okay,
the guys that play in the Chuckers, and
right,
they could go on forever. So yeah,
right,
yeah, it's
right,
just
right,
everybody
right.
plays in everybody's band,
right.
And but the Chuckers kind of disappeared. They went on the road, and half of them got divorced. They all just kind of took off, and they would play like 200 shows or more a year, and we didn't see them for a while. And then when they came back, they had done this record, the Southern Rock Opera record, and this concept, and they recorded it. I think it was like, it was a funeral home or somewhere in Birmingham. It was like, you know, they cut it on the cheap, and then it kind of blew up. And the next time we saw them, they were playing, and they were doing this sort of electric three guitar thing to kind of put forth the whole, you know, it's sonically kind of matching the lyric, the Skinner thing,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
without really sounding anything like Skinner or
right.
anything. But so it was an interesting thing, you know. I mean, and I was, when I first heard it, I was taken aback because I had heard them when they were sort of like acoustic and everything.
Uh-huh.
And I don't, you know, I didn't know what to make of it, you know. And then it slowly kind of made sense, you know, what was happening. But
right.
And then this is early 2000s, and I was playing in The Possibilities, and we used to open for them. And then Jason moved to town, Jason Isbell, who was the other guitar player, and we got to know them. And then basically a few years later, 2008, The Possibilities had broken up. I was a stay-at-home dad with a two-year-old kid.
You would have done anything to get out of the house.
Get the fuck out of Sorry, honey. No, it was like the most inopportune time to like join a band and like go out for a month. You know, it was like a kid, you know, he's 2 years old, and my wife's working like 80-hour weeks, and then Patterson, we did a this is funny. This is, I'm tying it back, man. I know all about. But like, we did this cover show, or this band would back up and do sort of a karaoke thing, and they're like, "Oh, would you want to sing a song?" And I said, and they're like, "Why don't you do Pressure by Billy Joel?" And I was like, "Yeah." So I went up there and I did this, you know, maybe the least cool song of an artist who's not considered cool, you know, by anybody. But like, I went up and did it, and Patterson was there. And Spooner Oldham had played keyboards on their previous record, and they've been touring. And Spooner was, you know, he's pushing, at that point, probably he was in his early 70s, mid 70s. Right, right. He's touring with these kids, or not kids, but younger folks. And, you know, he's like floating off, wandering, you know, just like disappearing or falling downstairs. Cause he's an older dude, and you know, he doesn't need
he's
to be
seen
touring.
A lot. Yeah,
seen
yeah.
a lot. And
he played on the Rolling Thunder tour.
He played on When a Man Loves a Woman. Yeah, and no, all this shit. He's just like
I played on a record with Spooner.
Which one was?
This is actually a Green on Red record.
Oh, really?
Recorded at Ocean Way Studio.
Oh, that's amazing.
With Glenn Johns producing. It's a whole other story.
I think we talked a little bit about this. Yeah. We'll get into it. I don't want Manny to start throttling me. Because it's, you know. I can get into the nerd shit. I don't know. I'm sure you can too. But like, I'm trying not to. But like, that. Anyway, he was leaving the band, and they wanted someone to do it. So to show the brain, Patterson, like, he sees me doing this like song, and he's like, he came up and he took me outside. He's like, "I fucking hate Billy Joel, but that was really cool what you did with it." And it was like, and it was awesome, because he went up and did Little Red Riding Hood. He was dressed as the wolf, and his wife was dressed as Little Red Riding Hood. And then so it was like this surreal moment where after I walk off and he's like, "Come on, I want to talk to you." And it's like this wolf talking to me. Like in any other, like in the movie, who would have like...
Was it Halloween?
It was.
Okay.
I'm sorry. That should clear it up. It's Halloween year round in Athens. Athens, like the whole thing with Halloween is like people who should not be... Like, you know, it's like... It is. I don't know if you ever saw Patton Oswalt's bit on Athens, but it is like there's like fairy dust and like it's like arrested development.
Okay.
It's just a mess, man. Okay. People don't grow up there, but Halloween. It's adults are just dressing up and doing this whole thing and play cover shows of bands.
It's a big opportunity.
But you had to take the kid on the road, right?
I did, that's a crazy story.
Yeah.
Did you ever see that Nell movie like with where you know Jodie Foster
Nell?
Grows
oh,
up?
Sure.
And then, it was that kind of thing, but like on a tour bus, and he had a little nook underneath the bus. Anyway, it was.
I can picture it all.
It was it was crazy. It was not ideal, but it was a good opportunity, and she was real cool about it. And I just sort of like the first day I woke up, like we played in Chattanooga, like Blues and Brews or some place in Chattanooga the first night, and I drank way too much, and then I woke up the next day and walked out, and it was 4 p.m, you know, because I'd been like, you know, stay at home dad, like raising this kid and everything, and I was like, and Cooley goes like, "Good morning, sunshine," and I was like, "Oh no," and like woke up and walked to soundcheck. It was like a, you know, a dream come true in a lot of ways, but also like surreal and weird, so that's a long way,
but you've handled it with grace and
as
dignity
as much as I could. Yeah, not a lot of dignity, but like, well, it was great.
I mean, you are here, so
it was you know, but that, you know, but they also it worked out.
No, I'm guessing that they probably really enjoyed having your presence there.
Well, it was a dark time, you know, that Jason had left the band, so it was a very interesting era. But I mean, I love, I don't know. I think they honestly hired me because I could be slightly bubbly if I'm not, you know, in a hole. So like, I think even in that situation,
and
I was like,
they were thinking of changing the name of the band at that time, weren't they?
To what?
To Drive-By Fuckers, right?
I mean, And I would have,
because you had joined.
That had been and it would have been made perfect sense. And should have, but they didn't.
But instead, they stuck with it because they already had the brand established.
You can't.
There's no point in switching horses in midstream.
No.
FDR said.
No. But you know, Yankee. Think about it. I mean, I was, they don't give a fuck about bringing a Yankee into the band, but like I had, you know, there were a couple of moments.
But the Puerto Rican part.
The Puerto Rican part was it. You know, it was tough. It was like, yeah. You know, I kind of, I worked it past them.
Como?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it was a whole thing, you know. I took the timbales and I was like kind of working into the set, and it didn't work. But I
because they thought you said timbale, right? Not tamale.
No, that's right. It was a whole thing, man. But
yeah,
no, it was. You know, I think it was a little, and at least in my head, like being a Yankee in this band,
it was.
And I realized that it didn't. None of that makes. None of it matters. But at the same time, I was like, what am I doing here? You know, it's they're a Southern rock band in the sense that they're from the South. It's not like
right.
You know, it's.
But I mean, they are a rock band. I was listening. It's like yeah, at moments. It's some of it's kind of crazy horse ish. Mm-hmm. You know, it's yeah, it's all the shit everybody likes. All the shit.
Absolutely.
All the shit I like. You know.
I mean, I think initially, you know, when they were before they had a band called Adam's House Cat. And they also had a band called Horse Pussy that didn't go for that long, but probably maybe because of the name, but I don't know. But they were like kind of replacements-esque, you
right,
know?
Right. I could see
and,
that.
And so that, it's all the same shit.
Shambolic.
It's all
like
the same
that,
shit. It's
right,
like
right,
the
right,
accent's
right,
the only
right.
thing that, right, right. You know, I mean, with the whole like Chilton thing and the big star, it's like it's the musically, it's like obviously Memphis, but it's like the twang is what kind of.
Right.
Immediately
well,
gives it away, sort
well,
of.
Well,
to
there's a certain thing of Southern fried freaks.
Yes.
And I've spoken about this on the podcast before. I'm a fan. I'm a student of this. It's because in many cases, freaks from different places in the hinterlands of America, they know they don't fit in as young people. They set their sights on New York or San Francisco, yeah. And then they get the fuck out. That happens to a certain percentage of the people. That's who's in New York and San Francisco. But then there's another class of people who are from Tuscaloosa, from
yeah.
Macon, from fucking, you know, the panhandle of Georgia or some shit. And they're freaks and they don't fit in, but they don't leave.
No,
they
you
stay there
double
and they,
down.
They,
I mean,
they eke out a scene.
Yeah.
And it really cooks down on itself, man. And that's where some of the coolest shit happens.
Absolutely, man.
Now you and I, I'm going to jump forward. You and I first met a year ago,
mm-hmm.
at or 2 years ago, coming up on almost 18 months ago.
Yeah.
playing this band Loose Cattle. You have known Michael Cerveris for some time. I guess he's a huge fan of Drive-By Truckers. He's knows y'all.
He had reached out to me,
okay.
You know, not too long before. I mean, a year before I met y'all. You know, like it was right before everything shut down. Like
right, and you actually the first thing we played on together. I'd never met you, but we did this remote recording of John Cale's "Fear
right.
Is a Man Best
yeah.
Man's Best Friend."
Yeah.
We all recorded in our homes and put it all together, and you played piano on it.
Right.
And I saw a video of you playing. Who's this fucking guy? Where'd
yeah,
you get him
it's
from?
Weird. It's that was a weird time. You know, that was kind of my. That's what I did. The whole pandemic was play on stuff and send shit to people and
right.
kind
right.
of in a hole and waste. You know, boat a box of wine on the piano. And like, you know, I did screaming shit where I would. Because Patterson and Cooley would do these streaming shows where mm-hmm. the management like got them these real like legit, you know, like streaming shows, and then they hooked me up with it, and I would do it, and about an hour in I would be falling forward, and then I wouldn't remember, and by the end I was like giving out like, oh, if you have any requests, call my number.
You're giving your phone number.
Yeah, you know, and then wake up the next day, I can't remember if I shut the laptop, if it was still open. I don't remember what I did.
Oh, Jesus.
And you could, yeah, anyway. But
it was a dark time.
It was a dark
everyone.
Time,
yeah,
you know.
You bought Bitcoin.
I think I did.
Yeah,
I think I don't even know what that
Bitcoin.
Is. And I was
yeah.
like, you know, invested yeah. all kinds of.
Sure, sure. Time anyway. And energy.
Now, how old is your kid now?
He's 18.
18 now.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And
where is he doing time?
He's. You know, this is downtown Athens, man. It's, you know, right. this is a pretty good, there's a pretty good clink down there, and it's, you know, they should send him off, but he's just been down by the courthouse the whole
so
time.
So he's your dealer.
He is my dealer.
Good.
Strangely,
keep it in the family.
No, you know, he got it's a.
Yeah.
No, he kind of flipped around the other way. He's a real good goody two shoes, as far as I know.
You
know?
Okay.
Right. Well, that's all. You know, appearances are everything.
It is. It is. And if that's the case, he is doing a really good job. Because I know I pulled the wool over my dad's eyes pretty good.
Well, yeah.
You know, which is what you do. But I think he just does not. You know, he never.
Well, yeah, you told him that car looks great, Dad. You pulled the wool over his eyes many times. Yeah,
Dad, I don't know what I was
upholstery,
doing.
Upholstery? Who needs that, Dad?
They slammed on the brakes. I wasn't looking at the radio when I slammed in, you know, into the car in front of me and crushed the tinfoil 510. You know, but,
yeah. Well, anyway. We finally meet. We finally meet at Dockside Studio.
Yes.
In Maurice, Louisiana, right outside Lafayette. Legendary Dockside Studio,
yeah.
Which I'd never been to before that day. I met you there.
I thought you'd been there.
And I'd always heard about it. Oh, it's an amazing place. It's magical. I think, what's so fucking magic? How great could it be?
Right.
Why does everybody talk about this? Now, I found it to be so.
It was.
For a number of reasons. I think one of the main reasons is the fucking Neve console and how good everything sounds on playback. The cue system. Now, I when I was on the road with Sonny Landreth, the road manager is the guy who built that studio and was the first engineer there.
Oh, my God.
Tony Daigle for about 10 years.
Crazy.
So he chose all that equipment and put it all together. So, but it is a magical place. You and I, we got there with John Aniello, who I didn't really know much about John until I started looking him up, which he's done everything. You had looked him up enough to be kind of starstruck, I think.
Yeah, I was losing my mind. It was. I definitely asked him a lot of questions.
Then we got in that session, and as we're playing through our regular, you know, we had a band that had played this material. Some half of it we'd played some, and the other half we'd kind of rehearsed a little bit. We get there with you with the secret sauce, and every single tune you would come out with a sound, an instrument choice, an approach that would just elevate everything.
Oh, wow.
Just illuminated the whole thing. It was such a thrill to. We were all so.
Oh man, I'm
so
glad.
Happy and the record came out so great. You know,
I'm glad,
no,
man.
No
it was nerve wracking, kind of going in to that, because especially when it's a band that's kind of already, you know, play together. You hop in and you know it could be. It's all again. It's all sort of like vibe and
sure.
Figuring it out. But I figured Michael kind of knew what he was doing, and we all famously. Got together real quick, and which was
right.
Which was
right.
Awesome.
You and I, we started talking, and we never stopped.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
He started asking me questions about Alex.
Yeah,
Jones,
it was. I was like, I'm not going to do it the first day. I'm going to wait because that's what you do. You like wait, and then you casually bring it up over lunch or dinner the next day. And I waited about 20 minutes. You were like loading in bass, and I'm like, "Hey, can you tell me about you know?" What was it?
Well, it was a wonderful meeting.
I
and,
loved
that.
Yeah.
No, we had a great time together. Now, that record came out great. We actually that record is coming out in the fall on Single Lock
Single
Records,
Lock, yeah.
A label out of Muscle Shoals.
Yeah.
Bring it back
Mutual
around
friends.
Again.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. It's a
very
big
cool.
circle. Rock and Roll College, as Chuck Prophet calls it.
Exactly.
You know? It's like
exactly.
If you stay in it long enough, you wind up knowing everybody.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. No,
well, so speaking of other bands, you play in all these other bands. Tell me about this band, Model Citizen.
Yeah, Model Citizen is Matt Patton, the bass player, and the Truckers. But you know he's been around Tuscaloosa and Birmingham and he's from Jasper, Mississippi originally. But he's great. The Dexateens, I don't know if you've seen the Dexateens,
oh,
but they're
yeah,
great
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Killer band. And
this is a band that sounds like the Stooges crossed with the MC5. Sort
yeah,
of.
Yeah, with like Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. Is that so? He brought me in to do like kind of like Farfisa.
Okay.
Because they used to be just a trio, and the drummer is like a you know a Keith Moon acolyte, and it's
right.
Like just full on, you know, nonstop. But he brought me in, and I just would play some. Transistor organ shit on it and it's a blast.
So
yeah.
you did this record live at Dialback Sound.
Yeah, which
right?
is his studio in Water Valley, Mississippi.
Well, now doesn't Bruce Watson mm-hmm. from Fat Possum have something to do with Dialback Sound?
I believe he sold it to Matt. So Matt, I know Matt owns it, and it was the old Fat Possum studio. So there was a
because
chair with like T that says like there's like a folding chair that says T model, and it's just open, no one sits in it. You know, it's like T model four. T-model there's all kinds four, of like right, heavy right, right. folks played there. It's definitely haunted, and it's
crazy
it's
these connections.
Cool.
So the guy who runs and started Single Lock Records, Reed Watson.
Yeah.
So Reed manages, besides having Single Lock Records, has a management company. He manages Jimbo Mathis,
okay.
who also has recorded a Dial Back Sound
a
number of
times. Is he
related
to Bruce or no?
I don't think they are related.
Okay, that's what... I love... And Jimbo's great, you know. It's crazy.
He's the Huck Finn of American music.
He really is.
As Jim Dickinson referred to
that's
him.
That's right.
Accurate...
I played a festival thing with him, and it was... Yeah, he's just like... He just puts stuff together. It's a similar vibe to like Chuck Prophet, but like sort of a more southern thing. Like he knows everybody. He plays. He can play anything at any point. You know what I mean?
Chuck is very competent and very smart and thorough and you can see how it's all working and I mean not to contrast that in an unflattering way, but Jimbo. Just seemed Jimbo's I don't know what's going on, man.
Right,
help me here.
Right.
But somehow he's just everything he does works. Every gut instinct he has is correct. You know.
it's not to simplify, but I feel like there's a little more of that. If you're from the area, it's like I don't know how much of it is actually there as sort of. Shown sort of you know what I mean
right,
it's
right,
like
right. Well,
but there's a it I agree he's pretty awesome. I've done a couple of things with him and it's really really cool, you know, and
Man,
mind-blowing.
I don't dig about that guy.
It's crazy. Matt has turned me on to so much great stuff, and he definitely, I suspect he'll probably be living here soon. He's obsessed with New Orleans.
Cool. Well, now let's get into some of your... We're kind of on the downslope of the podcast a little bit, but let's get into some of your solo stuff, because, you are a fan of pure pop, AM Gold, the Bay City Rollers even.
I don't have any problem with the Bay City Rollers.
No.
It's just the way it is.
So tell us.
Well, Howard Cosell made them famous.
He did.
How so? Well, because Ed Sullivan had the Beatles.
Right.
And ABC gave Howard Cosell his own variety show on Sunday nights. And every Sunday night, he had the Bay City Rollers on it. And they were... They were the new British Invasion.
Right.
Oh, okay.
In plaid.
And yeah.
That was...
Yeah, in plaid.
The tartan.
Yeah. Tartan.
Exactly. Oh, God. Yeah, I guess they were good. I don't know.
No, I mean...
They weren't that good.
It's all relative, you know what I mean? It's obviously like a bubblegum thing. But to me, it's like no different than like... Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got
the Archies,
love in my early, you know, or Ohio Express or all that shit. It's like it was very much made for like the cartoon kid thing. But somehow that shit was groovier than a lot of like musically it was cool.
It wasn't trying to be anything that it wasn't.
No, it's very like right.
not pretentious.
Box, you know?
I mean, it's formulaic, but
pretentious.
Absolutely,
yeah. It's
happened to them? Are they still around?
Which one?
Bay City Rollers.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I thought the dude from Pilot had something to do with them. The guy, it's Magic guy, you know, from Scotland. I think he was related to one of the Bay City Rollers. Yeah. I don't know, man.
How does the average white band...
They're somehow tied into
I don't know. They're Scottish.
Man. Yeah, it's a Scotch thing. I mean, it's, you know, they all know each other. It's a small area, you know.
Not that many musicians.
No, but yeah.
Well, so you've put out several records here. You always have these sort of this theme, you know, the bittersweet.
The
wordplay, but also just the sentiment of, you know, you and that's one thing I love about pop music, like Burt Bacharach, you know.
Right.
It's a pop music in many senses is a way to deliver a very melancholy message in a very sugar-coated rapping.
Yeah, it's all about like depressive suicidal lyrics with upbeat music, right? I mean, I think I always thought that's mostly certainly what Power Pop's about. You know,
yeah,
Badfinger is like,
yes.
You know, and I don't mean that like lightly, because they really, you know, it was a heavy thing. I just did a podcast with my buddy about the Midnight Special stuff, and I did there was an episode in 73 with Badfinger, and I don't know if you're allowed to mention other podcasts here,
sure,
but it was
it was
one of those things where it was like I love it because they were on it. They didn't play great. But that's also another Power Pop thing, you know, with like,
yeah,
there's not like always great, amazing footage of
blow
them.
Your big moment. Yeah.
You know, it's the big star thing. There's moments of that and there where it's like, you know, amazing players, but like not, you know, when the time came to kind of do it, it's not always, you know, there. But nonetheless, you know, seeing
a tragic flaw.
Yeah. But seeing Badfinger next to like, you know, on a show hosted by Ann Murray. And then side by side with like Nitty Gritty Dirt Band and like Steve Martin is like kind of surreal.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in nowadays terms.
So when you say Power Pop, you mentioned Badfinger.
Yeah.
So you fast forward another decade. What are Power Pop bands like in the 80s?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, early 80s.
Like, I have a weird definition of Power Pop in my head. But
what do you think? I mean, what do you think is like in the 80s? I mean, I think it became a little more mainstream, like the... I don't know. What do you think?
I think what's that band? Fuck, that English band. I can't remember. My memory's so bad.
Adam Ant.
No, not Adam Ant. No, Style Council to me is kind of a pop band.
Yeah, but they did. They pushed.
But who's the band before Style Council?
Oh, the Jam. Yeah,
the Jam.
Yeah,
yeah. The Jam to me is like what I think of.
Totally.
Pop.
I mean, it's all just taken. It's all the Who, you know. I think in the end.
And like the Knack.
And the Knack and the Well, the Knack again. The Knack was like, again, from it's all just reading shit. But like, I feel like the Knack was the band that broke through. That probably ruined it for other power pop bands. You think it would like they would have like made it better, but I feel like it almost like shut it down.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they really like after that it was like, what are you gonna do after the Knack? They pulled off that they had the black and white picture. It looked like their first Beatles record.
Right.
Like it was like this perfect thing.
They used it all up,
and it's great. And I listen to that record straight through. It's amazing. You know, I mean, it's. The lyrics don't quite hold up, you know.
Straight through.
No, I get it. No, and mind you, I'm also like, again, that was so...
No, because I think everyone's definition of power pop is different.
No, but also I was like 7 years old when it came out. So like, to me, the power pop thing, that's the weird thing. It appeals to like, it's bubblegum, right? It's bubblegum with like sadder lyrics. It's not even trying to be like sugar. So, you know what I mean? It's like they're just trying to like get laid, but musically it's like very much like early Beatles, you know.
The only band I ever was in, our original drummer who was amazing, and we toured for the first year of our existence, and then he quit the band because he said, "I'm moving to Seattle to be part of a power pop band," and this is like right at the beginning of grunge.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like, well, what the fuck are you going to do in Seattle?
Well, what band was? Do you know what it was? I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, there's...
I don't know.
Elements of... I mean, Scott McCoy's up there. He was up there like with Young Fresh Fellows, but but that's kind of pre-grunge. You know, there's no grunge in that at all.
Yeah,
but,
so when people say power pop, always get confused.
It's also like any sort of genre. It's like whatever. Like Americana is like a weird thing because like in the late 90s, like... The band Power, the Possibilities I was in, we were like trying to get away from being called Americana. It was like, oh no, it was like a death knell, you know. And I think like we were all, but also like, you know, like Wilco was doing sort of Summer Teeth, and all these bands were kind of moving away from that kind of thing. And now it's still kind of a big thing, but like, I don't know, man. Power pop's, it's not an easy definition other than like just two guitars, bass, drums. Very simple, formulaic, you know, songs about breaking your heart.
One guitar, bass, drums.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's the trios and stuff, but then you have like the records and all these like, you know, two guitar guy. I don't know, man. It's a weird thing.
I'm sorry.
No, but like, no, not at all. But I'm curious because you're in L.A. Like, what?
This is even a different question.
Okay.
Whatever happened to Tang? Remember Tang?
Tang, the
is
drink?
Tang still around?
The drink?
The drink, the drink of astronauts?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I don't think it is.
I don't think Tang is.
I think it's around. I don't know if people drink it.
Now, what about Bosco?
Yeah.
No, Bosco's a whole other thing.
Bosco's still around.
Is it?
Oh, yes, it is. Sure it is. You can find it, man.
I looked for Tang.
What about Dentine?
Dentine is...
Oh, that's definitely a thing.
Is it around?
I haven't seen Dentine in years. Where?
I don't know. In my mind, it's still
there. Yeah, your mind is still
around. What about Chiclets? Are those around?
No, I haven't seen Chiclets.
Okay, so Chiclets was like my jam as a kid.
If you go to Mexico, Chiclet. That's everybody's selling Chiclets, man.
It's a different thing, though, man.
Come on, gringo. Get it together.
I don't know. Well, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast for sure.
I think we should keep...
What about Pop Rocks? Remember Pop Rocks?
Pop Rocks is still around.
You can find them at candy stores.
Yeah.
Those big like mall candy stores.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Can't get Chiclets there.
I don't think
Chiclets
so.
Is weird. I think Chiclets is
I
gone.
I think Chiclets is gone.
Really?
Today,
which is
bad.
Sad.
Get over it.
I feel
man.
Bad.
Get over it, man.
Okay, I'm trying to butch myself up here, but as I always am. So, let's touch briefly on your most recent record,
sure.
which is a pop record.
Yeah, probably the most.
Roll up a song.
Sure.
So we have a couple of minutes to talk about. How do you wind up you and Pete Smith hooking up, a comedy writer from Adult Swim?
Yeah.
It's a terrific record, man. It's
a lot of different angles with it, and I never know how to tell, but it's like I know him through several different folks, but like...
He's a lyricist.
He lives in Atlanta, you know, Adult Swim. Like, he was kind of when they did... So he worked at TBS, and when they had the access to the old cartoons and they started doing it with Cartoon Planet, they started taking the old Space Ghost stuff and then redubbing like as a talk show host, like silly stuff, doing interviews with like Paul Westerberg and all kinds of folks. And he was part of that. And then one of the characters on Space Ghost Coast to Ghost was Brack, who was the villain from Space Ghost. He ended up doing an offshoot and doing the Brack show, and that was his baby, and he did that. He also did, like, if you ever watched Adult Swim, and they'd do the bumpers going to commercials where it was just a black screen and it was some, you know, sort of non sequitur wild stuff. That was his thing too. But he wrote all the lyrics. He's a lyricist. He actually did a great record in the early 70s with this guy who was kind of a jazz guy, Gary McFarlane. He was like a jazz guy that did stuff with Bossa Nova folks and with Bill Evans and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But he, at some point he started doing, he was also the first person to do like Beatles songs in like a samba form, like, and doing it really well and stuff. But like Pete was, he was at Pratt like in for art design and ended up making album covers for this guy. And then at some point, Gary McFarlane asked him to write lyrics, and they did one record together called this beautiful record called Butterscotch Rum.
Oh, right.
And then Pete wrote all the lyrics, and Gary McFarlane did the music, and they recorded it at like A&R with all these jazz guys, and also like a young Tony Levin who played, you know, and also like Denny Sewell who played was recording across the hall doing McCartney's Ram record, played drums on it. So it's like this young teenager is like kind of thrown into this whole thing with all these heavies. Phil Ramone's there, this whole thing. And they did this record, and it was on Buddha Records, which was kind of a bubblegum label.
Right.
And then Gary McFarlane passed away in a unfortunate incident at a bar where someone left like methadone on the bar. And
Methadone takeout party. I was just listening to that song today.
Yeah. I mean,
well, you know, Jay, I'm going to have to wrap you up on this story.
No, wait.
Go ahead. Got 30 seconds.
So now I'm done. It's deer in headlight. No, anyway, but Gary McFarlane passed away. But like, and he got out of the lyric business. I met him through my brother-in-law, who's a comedian out in L.A., and he's friends with Pete's daughter. We started, I would nerd it out about this record. A lot of friends had recommended it. I hung out with him. We talked about like Harry, we're all Harry Nilsson, Randy Newman, like singer-songwriter fans, Margot Gurion, all these heavy singers. And at some point he started sending me lyrics. We did a record. and then we put it out, and we're still writing songs. And that's it.
I love the record.
Thanks, man.
Record.
I appreciate it.
Well, when you say he got out of the lyric business, so he got out of the word business?
No, he didn't, because he wrote songs for Space Ghost Coast to Coast and the Brack Show. So he wrote these great like parody songs, you know, for cartoons, for characters. So he,
now, I don't know what Adult Swim is.
It's like an Comedy Central adult cartoon. Animated TV show. So he was writing these sort of.
Is there porno in it?
Well, you know, but it's definitely not for kids, but definitely for an adult show.
Yeah,
you know, like a Rick and Morty, those sort
so
of.
So why
cartoons,
do they call
right?
it Swim? What is Swim?
Well,
mean?
Like an Adult Swim is when the kids have to get out of the pool.
Right, right, right. It's adults only.
So it's like adult animated stuff.
Oh.
Yeah. So they used to show it at night when the kids would go to kids. Yeah.
So you can jack off in the water.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that sure. It? Well,
and
with
you
kids
have
are
to.
Sleeping.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
I get you.
Leave a floater.
Yeah. Okay. Just call it that then. I don't understand.
Well, Jay.
Yeah.
Fantastic, man. I know we could talk forever. On the way home, we'll talk about Sinatra's Watertown.
Oh, okay.
And,
here we go.
And I'll tell you my Randy Newman story.
Oh,
and,
hell yeah.
Well, man.
Thank
you
so much.
This was worth the wait, Jay. I hope for you as well.
I had
well.
A blast. This is a...
A dream
this is
come
a dream.
True.
This is a. It is literally a new oh, yeah. New Orleans
don't
dream come
say
true.
That.
I will be in a intro. Like a hotel room, scared to go out. Like, and I just don't know where to find anything cool in
Yo,
New
where
Orleans.
Are you
and this is
tonight?
The cool. The, well, the tonight is the last night that the Ace Hotel is apparently the Ace Hotel. Apparently,
oh, really?
It's bought out. And
oh,
now
no
it's,
kidding.
Tomorrow it will be a Hyatt thing. So.
Oh, what a shame, man.
Oh.
So I like tonight, the Ace.
I do like that. I don't, it's the first time I've been there, but I do like it.
I blame Juneteenth for it.
Okay.
Do you? Okay. Yeah.
Tomorrow's Juneteenth.
Tomorrow.
No, it's
Wednesday's Juneteenth. Okay.
No, I don't know. You've been a good guy. I'll probably never see you again. So
I don't know. I'd like to
take
care.
No, he'll
come
be
out
back.
If I can.
Back.
Yeah. Well, we'll be again.
Well.
I mean, I'm saying come out.
I'll come out.
I'm saying
I'm
like come hang
out.
Out. Like I'm saying like Lex.
No, I'm going home.
You don't hang
I gotta
out.
Work in the morning.
I understand.
All right.
Yeah, I don't hang out with.
Well, Jay, thank you so much. And as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends,
but struggle continues, my friend.
Good night.
When I see her bouncing down the street to a beat that only she can hear, it's knowing that she's come for me. It's got me grinning from ear to ear. Girl.